Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Come on!
Welcome back. Love those sound effects. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Now, you know, regardless of what your position is on things like COVID, vaccinations, masks, social distancing, all of the above, we've been living with this endless cascade of friction over these issues for the last 2 years. And you don't need me to explain it to you anymore because, I mean, you've lived it. Interesting, though, the New York Times has got an article talking about how there's what they're describing as a schism among Democrats. So the people on the left, they go into the fact that, well, for the last couple of years now, there's been, of course, a real divide ideologically, a divide between conservative Americans and liberal Americans, people on the left who are much more adamant about taking COVID seriously, some on the right much more adamant about not taking it as seriously, divisions over masks, etc. Well, what they've identified and what they talk about in this article is how the same thing is now happening among people on the left. So how there are now key divisions appearing within the left, so predominantly Democrats, and how Democrats are now having this kind of mini war among themselves as things start to get back to normal. So as you go into a restaurant or to a store, and in some parts of the country, this has been true for, gosh, easily 6 months or so. Florida, Arizona, Ohio, a number of other states where you don't really see anyone wearing masks, or it's very rare now that you see people wearing masks. Now, if you go into liberal enclaves, you see far more people wearing masks than you do out and about otherwise. But they did a poll and they found that nearly 50% of very liberal Americans say that they believe COVID presents a great risk to their personal health. Other liberals and moderates and conservatives, as they self-identify, tend to be less worried or a lot less worried. When parents were asked about the threat to their children, the pattern was similar. More than 60% of very liberal Americans believe that mask mandates should continue for the foreseeable future, maybe indefinitely. I can't even fathom thinking that way. But there are, in that group, there are people who they really want everyone to wear masks basically forever. They say that most moderates and conservatives see these mandates as a temporary strategy. I don't really like the word moderate in this context because, I won't get into the reasons why, but in any case, why does political ideology so strongly shape COVID beliefs is one of the questions. And they get into the political dimension, so all of the hullabaloo between the last president, President Trump, and President Biden. They get into some of the statistics about attitudes toward the efficacy of the vaccination. It's not a vaccine, my friend will say. Yeah, okay, the shot, whatever you want to call it. What about masking of children? All of these things. So if you're interested in this sort of sociological phenomenon of the division that we saw among ourselves as a people over the last 2 years, and how this is now in a very strange sort of way playing out again in micro within the left, and how there's sort of this fission between those who are further left who want to go whole hog with mask mandates and all the rest, and the others who previously were sort of holding that view, but now they're saying, can we just get back to normal, please? And it'll be interesting, especially with the midterm elections coming up, not to mention the presidential elections coming up in another 3 years. We'll see what happens. But Cyrus will get a link to that posted if you're interested in seeing a way in which these divisions take place. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Ann now in San Jose, California. Ann, welcome to the program.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having my question.
You're welcome. Yeah, this is the place to bring your question.
I didn't actually think I would get through. My boyfriend's been asking me to ask this question for a really long time now.
Okay. Okay, so what's the
question?
I'm on pins and needles.
Yeah.
I can hardly wait.
So just to give it some context, I'm a Catholic school teacher. I've been in Catholic schools for about 6 years, grew up Catholic as well. Mm-hmm. I'm currently at a new school here in the Bay Area. They're a Catholic school. And my question for you is that I'm seeing trans flags being posted around the school. And I'm wondering, is it morally right for me to work at such a Catholic school? And if what I could do to bring this issue up within the diocese or our local church.
Okay. Well, it will be fraught with fault lines, and I don't begin to know what the situation is at that school. I believe in what's called the principle of subsidiarity, and that's a very Catholic thing, and that is you try to solve problems at the most local level if possible, and then you escalate them to higher levels when that's not possible. And Jesus really kind of enunciated this principle of subsidiarity when he said in Matthew chapter 18, if you have something against your brother, he's done something, go to him in person and try to reason with him. And if he is willing to see your point and he accepts what you're saying, then great, you've won over your brother. But if he won't listen to you, then take a few witnesses, take two or three witnesses. And he's invoking a standard from the Old Testament in the Mosaic Covenant where it says, in the mouths of two or three witnesses will all things be established. So he says, that's the next level. You kind of bring it up a notch. And he says, if he won't listen to them, then he says, take it to the church. And if he will not listen even to the church, Jesus says, then treat him as a Gentile or a tax collector. So that is the way of saying you basically stay away from that person, or you cut that person off in the case of something more serious. So that would be the principle of subsidiarity in a compact form given to us by Jesus. So my advice would be to follow that paradigm and start with the principle of the school. I'm sure it's not the, well, maybe it is. Maybe it is a given teacher who has that flag flying in his or her classroom. But I think the appropriate person to talk to about it is not the teacher, but the principal. And just say, this is a public display of an ideological symbol that promotes something that the Catholic Church says is contrary to our universal call to holiness. We are all called to be saints. And a big part of being a saint involves purity and chastity. It's not the only parts. They're not the only parts, but they're big parts of it. And this is promoting a worldview that not only is untethered from reality and anti-science, it's also contrary to the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is we are all called to find our identity in the Lord, not in what we presume to be, you know, what you presume to be your gender at any given moment of any given day. That's contrary to the gospel of Jesus Christ. So for a Catholic school to be displaying a symbol of an ideology that's contrary to science, it's contrary to reality, it's contrary to the church's teachings, this is beyond problematic. And I would like you to make sure that that flag comes down, because my children attend this school, or in your case, you're a teacher. So I would guess I was speaking more in the voice of the parent. But either parent or teacher, you have a right to object to this because it's contrary for those reasons. Now, let's say that you don't get any satisfaction. Let's say that they being the principal, he or she, says, no, we're going to have this. We're inclusive and we're tolerant. Well, then at that point, I would bump it up to the next level and I would go to whoever's in charge of the Catholic school system in the diocese. And if you wanted to CC your bishop and just say, here's what's going on, I have an issue with this, and then see what happens. But that would be taking it to the local level first and then seeing what happens. Now, your situation is different, it seems to me, only because you're employed there. So there would be hopefully not a situation where you would be retaliated against. I hope that wouldn't happen. But that's something you'd have to weigh into the equation. Do you think there are other teachers who work at this school and who feel like you do about this, and you could be, as a group, raising this concern?
I am still pretty new and still figuring out who is Catholic in terms of this view. But for me at this point, like, I still need some time to figure out who would be willing to help me with this. But right now, I've gotten this sense it's a lot of them have been embedded in this ideology and seeing it like it's loving of neighbor. That is like the main argument I've heard. So I don't know if I have high hopes that I will find someone, maybe one, that would be also in that same boat as me.
That sounds like a difficult situation, especially because it's your place of employment. If it's a situation where it's happening around you, but it's not being asked of you, that's bad enough. But I suppose you could keep your head down for a while and try to make your way forward. The only problem there is that your work effort, as noble as it is every day, goes ultimately to support a school that has been corrupted, it sounds like, by permitting. I mean, if the principal were not in favor of this or not willing to allow it, it wouldn't be there. So that suggests to me that the principal is aware of it and is okay with it. So I would have qualms about
with him about it. I brought it up to him and was like being very vulnerable of like, you know, this is, I'm just seeing this. I've asked the same question to him as to you, Patrick. And the response I've gotten so far is that, you know, like we deal with this in our own family and I'm being vulnerable with you. And we've brought it up to our bishop and they are, the response is they're forming a committee to figure out what to do with just this issue as a whole within the Catholic schools in the South Bay. And that was not really an answer to my question. So it definitely is something from the top down. I just don't know, like, how much longer I could work there, just like what you said, with my work being tied up with this greater picture of things and inwardly, like, myself in a way supporting that being a teacher at this school.
Yeah. Yeah, it does go toward that issue, and that would be your efforts as a teacher are ultimately contributing to the success of the school, obviously, and the success of the school is bound up with this ideological aberration. So I could see where you could keep your head down and continue working there and not participate in those, you know, those serious problems. Don't let it get into your classroom and maybe be there as a kind of beacon of light and truth for the students who are in your classroom. But on the other hand, I could also understand how if it just became intolerable and you just couldn't abide it, that you would want to look for a job somewhere else. So that of course would be your nuclear option, would be to leave. Now I'm guessing because the school year, or at least this semester, well, in your case, the school year is just about up. It'll be over when, in May or June?
Yeah, June.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could ride that wave until you fulfilled your commitment and not leave these kids in the lurch by leaving in the middle of a semester or at the end of a school year. I mean, that seems to me, if you're going to go in a different direction, just to finish your obligation and then find a different job. I have a feeling they're probably really looking for qualified teachers. Everybody else is looking for people to work. I would think the schools are probably doing that as well. So you might be in a good position to get another job quickly.
Yeah, this would be the time to do it. Just, I know that what you were saying is that the previous teacher that left mid-year, so I'm a mid-year hire, as they say, and I was hearing like from the principal during this conversation, I was bringing this issue up with him, that this previous teacher like had a trans flag and identified as part of like a queer community is what the wording was. And so that was brought up in the middle of class to all these students, these freshman students. And the principal got a lot of phone calls about like, what is going on in this class? Like, this is supposed to be a Catholic school. And apparently a lot of parents called in and was like, I don't understand. We don't agree with this. And so, like, to just exemplify what you're saying is, like, I think there are families. This is a mostly Hispanic school. And just seeing that and knowing that demographic and seeing these flags is just like, how much do people really know what's going on? Like, and I feel called in a way, like, to stay, but I also, like, just morally feel like I am contributing to something that I don't agree with. So.
Yep. And that's the dilemma. That's the dilemma. You're not doing anything directly immoral yourself, but you're participating in an organization. How terrible that it's a Catholic school. You're participating in an organization where that is what's going on. So my guess, Anne, for what it's worth, is that you're probably trying to fight City Hall and you're probably going to lose, just knowing how these things tend to go. And I think what would need to happen, or at least one thing that could happen that could change things, would be if there was a revolt among the parents who said, I'm taking my kid out of this school. I'm not going to give good money, hard-earned money in the form of tuition to a school that is actively undermining my child's faith, actively undermining the gospel. I'm not going to do it. And if a significant enough number of parents were to do that, that kind of pain might produce some change. If a school in a similar situation saw 40% of its teachers leave in protest over something like this, that kind of pain could result in some change. But as Tears for Fears say, that there's no change unless there's some pain. And it may get to that. But then again, you may be long gone by the time it gets to that. We'll see.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for that insight.
Yeah. Well, you're in a difficult situation, but it sounds like you're doing the right thing to look for how you can resolve it. And if you can't resolve it, and sometimes you can't resolve it, you just move on to something else. And, you know, don't compromise what you know to be true. Don't compromise the gospel and stand firm. And thankfully, it's not as though you'll have to go destitute and live behind a dumpster or anything, because there are other jobs to be had. You know.
Yeah, that is true. Thank you for that hope.
All right, Anne. You sound like a great lady, and I certainly hope that this resolves in your favor in a way that's the least stressful. But even if it is stressful, I admire you for seeking to do the right thing.
Thank you, Patrick. It's been an honor to talk with you this morning.
Oh, I feel the same way, Anne. Thank you. Your children in your class are blessed to have you as their teacher. All right. You know what that music means? It means a quick timeout. We'll be right back with more, including your phone calls. The number to call, 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
All right, we are back. Man, the time just goes by so fast. Second hour, but that's okay because we have lines open. Not too many of them, but there are a couple. If you give me a call, we'll get you on the air with your comment or question. 888-914-9149. By the way, don't forget, on Friday, the Pope is going to consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, Ukraine also. And we are going to carry that live here on Relevant Radio Friday morning. And we invite you to participate. Definitely listen. You can also participate each afternoon. Drew Mariani at 3 p.m. Central is praying for peace right now. He's in the midst of a novena for peace. And you can pray along with him and lots of other people all around the world, in fact, by tuning into the Drew Mariani Show. And then every evening, Father Rocky and Margaret Kleinschmidt, they pray the Family Rosary across America and another huge blanket of prayer that extends all around the world. And we'd like you to be part of that. And it's all available to you for free right here on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Pamela in Nashville. Good morning, Pamela. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call. And I really have a comment for your last call-in. I think her name was Anne, is what you said.
The teacher, right.
Yes. And, you know, my children, I have one still left in a Catholic school in high school, and the other two are now in college. But we need teachers like her. And that problem is a problem globally. I definitely think nationally with pockets of that happening. And if everybody doesn't stay, first of all, I guess my thoughts are you're going to have that problem in the public school system if you're a teacher anyways, and you leave the Catholic school continuum and you go to the public school, you're going to have that problem to deal with and to contend to anyways. So why not charge the charge? And I understand, I mean, livelihood is involved and so forth to try to get supporters around there, but we need teachers like her to be able to create some balance, because if everyone just leaves, then there's no one there that's keeping a little bit of balance in the school system. And I think that's so necessary. So as much as, and both my children are experiencing that or have experienced that in their school, and I'm seeing it now, even down into elementary school, where they're having those issues occurring. And if like you said, if the principal is supporting that, or the diocese is like, well, we've got to be inclusive, and they don't feel the same way that it's our obligation to be able to not do that, not being exclusive, but just, you know, educating what our catechesis is about, then there's no one there to stand up for that. So it's so important. I know it's not a great position, but, you know, our Lord probably thinks she's strong enough to be able to help charge the battle.
Right. You know? I agree with your point. I don't disagree at all. I would extend the scenario a little bit, though. In some cases, there are people who are being actively pushed to participate in the things that are aberrational, things that are perverse. And in those cases, now, Anne, it didn't seem like it was at that point with her, but in some some schools where the teacher is told he has to hang that flag in his classroom, or he has to participate in the ideology in terms of pronouns or what have you, that's when some teachers, as much as they might want to be able to have their, you know, have their classrooms as a safe haven, they're not able to. So in a case like that, sometimes the only option you have, really, rather than compromise, is to move on. But before it gets to that point, I agree with you. I think that there is a time and place to stand and see if you can work the problem from within.
Yeah, and like you said, reaching out to parents, especially in the high school level, those students, I mean, my daughter would come home and say, I just can't believe that this is what you're paying for, Mom. And the kids are smart. They know. And so by having students, as well as parents, you know, talking to your parents about it, if you don't believe in that, there's a way to be able to say, hey, if you don't agree with this, go to your parent. And being able to do that, there are some vocal parents that we've been so fortunate to have that have taken that charge locally here and have questioned the diocese and questioned the schools. And some of them have been ostracized, sadly. But now that we're at such a huge issue and such a larger volume of people saying, no, this isn't why we're sending our kids to Catholic school. I think, like you said, reaching out to the teachers and the students and the parents, and letting the students know, hey, reach out to your parents or whatever, that might be just help her, because she is feeling a little bit out there by herself right now, it seems.
Right. Yeah, you may have heard her say that she thinks that there may be one or two other teachers in the school who feel like she does, but she's not entirely sure yet because she's new. So she hasn't really figured out who the friendlies are. I mean, if anything, this is a great example of why it's important for parents to have a choice in where they send their students and why the effort to make these choices available is so important. Now, that, of course, typically plays into the issue of public schools. You know, and the parents who would like to be able to send their children to a Catholic school or a charter school that's not necessarily Catholic, but is an alternative, this would be an example. Now, she's a teacher, so she has a choice in choosing where she works. A lot of parents, they're stuck because that's the only Catholic school in the area or some other combination of problems like that. But I agree with you in principle, at least, Pamela, that to the extent that a teacher like Anne can stay where she is and be a source of light and truth and encouragement for people who are in that system, so much the better. In cases where it becomes impossible.
The children. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm it sorry, does.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's okay. Because
my daughter is in that right now. She is now in a public, you know, college, and her eyes are wide open, and she's on a specific team event, and she's like, I'm one of four straight people, and they've made me sign off on this and that to say that, you know, we're inclusive and so forth, and that's kind of that continuum, and she has come full circle on digging her heels in a little bit more and saying, you know, if I don't stand up, then there's going to be no one there standing up. And I am the minority now. And when you're in that little bubble of that Catholic school and you move out in the world, you realize it's not the same playing field. And it's a shame that they're dealing with that. But in some ways, it's a blessing because it's giving them a little bit more experience for apologetics so that when they go out in the world, they need to be armed and, you know,
and I just prepared.
Think we, like I said, mm-hmm. yeah, and prepared. Yeah. Anyways, that was my comment. I appreciate you taking my 2 cents.
Good, Pamela. Happy yeah. to. And I appreciate it. I think it's right on target. And I'm sure other parents are encouraged by it.
So much, all of us. So we really appreciate you. Thank you so much.
You're so kind. Thanks, Pamela. Kind of you to say so. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go to, you know, as long as we're on the topic, Cyrus, before we go to the next phone call, there is a story I believe it was on Twitter, and it has to do with somebody who has detransitioned and is trying to get the word out about the problem that people face when they go back in the other direction. You know, everybody's cheering them on when they go in the direction of becoming trans, I suppose. But what about people who come back in the other direction? I want to share a little bit of this. I think we've got some time before the break. And I'm coming right back to your phone calls in just a minute. So please stand by. This I noticed on Twitter. It's a thread by someone named Carol. And Cyrus will get a link posted to this so you can read it for yourself. It's worth reading because it's coming from somebody in that world. And I'll just read to you some of the posts in this Twitter thread. Often, when hashtag detrans people, so I interpret that to mean people who have gone in the direction of trying to change their sex from male to female or vice versa, and then they come back. Detrans. When detrans people tell their stories, they are seeking validation of their pain and looking to make sense of their loss. I think that's very normal, and I shared my story initially for the same reason. But I soon realized that I might be able to create a real change with my story, so I kept sharing it. Any place I could. I wanted more people to understand that transition isn't always the answer, that therapists are failing people on a massive scale, and that the medical community is operating in an unethical way. I'm a living, breathing example of this. So I had to hold that example up. Had I stayed in the mindset of needing my pain acknowledged and understood by strangers, I would have crashed and burned a long time ago. That's not why I do this. I share my story to change something. I suspect those of us who are still doing this are of the same mindset. I've heard criticism from some over the fact that I shared my quote-unquote sad story because it places me in a victim role and is not productive, that I am just a gore show for others to gawk at, that I am playing into our voyeuristic culture. To that, I say, I kind of am. If you want to create change on a massive scale, you must play the game. You get nowhere standing outside the gates throwing rocks. You need to get inside the walls. And I want to change what I see as a great injustice. I see mentally ill people being preyed upon by a medical industry, by an ideology that is just a new religion with promises of salvation to hurt people, a religion that will never deliver on its promises, and I am not okay with this. It's why I share my story. It's why I am public. It's why I am here. Hashtag DTrans Awareness Day. Isn't it remarkable that within that world, that it's okay for you to go in one direction, but it's not okay for you to go in the other direction? Because it cuts against the narrative. It is a refutation of sorts of the narrative that all you really need to be happy is to change your sex, to be able to find that gender that's right for you, in which case you're going to be perfectly happy. And certainly in the case of those who wind up lopping off body parts in order to achieve that unachievable goal, many of them, I should think, and this person is one of them, it seems, is disillusioned and sorrowful over the decisions that were made and realize this was the wrong thing and I need to come back. But can you come back? There are situations where I'm thinking of the gentleman who runs the website sexchangeregret.com, or is it .org? I forget which. Cyrus, if you could check that for me, I want to make sure I give the correct address. But he went down the road of transitioning to become a woman. He didn't become a woman, but he had his body modified, let's just say, in an attempt to become a woman. And after years and years of living that way, he realized this is not me, this is not real. And he had to try to make his way back to being male. He is always going to be male. He is male. Walt Hoyer, I believe, is his name. Do you have his name handy, Cyrus? I know it's Walt. I'm trying to remember his last name.
Let's see. It's sexchangeregret.com.
.com, okay.
His name is Walt Hoyer.
Hoyer. There we go. Thank you. It's worth looking at. So parents, if you have a son or a daughter who's starting to make some noises about wanting to become the opposite sex, I would make sure that you have your child look at this website. There are videos, articles, testimonials, and these are by people. These are not like moralizing ministers or other people. It's people who have gone down that road and have realized this was a serious mistake. And in the case of some people, it's just not, there's, you know, it's too late for them. They can't recover the body they once had in some cases. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Chris in Chandler, Arizona. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, welcome.
I think what we need today is not so much the consecration of Russia. I think that probably really did actually happen. But we really need this consecration here to the United States. The United States right now is in really a sad state of affairs with the way we have our stance with abortion. We have Catholics at the highest level of government right now that are doing everything in their power to promote choice. Biden took down the Geneva Declaration. He took down the Mexico City policy. They're going after the Hyde Amendment. He had to be admonished by Gregory here a few months back, saying that he didn't believe that life begins at conception. Gregory said, no, life does begin at conception. There's confusion among Catholics. Catholics think that they could support a party.
You cut out there for a minute, Chris. Oh, you dropped. Okay. Bad phone connection, maybe? I don't know. Well, some of those same policies that you referred to, and I deplore the fact that, like precision clockwork, every time there's a Democratic administration, they undo the Mexico City policy, which prohibits federal monies to go for abortion. The Hyde Amendment is a somewhat different but a similar kind of provision. And like clockwork, when a Republican administration comes into office, those things go back to normal. When a Democratic administration comes in, then they get taken off the table again. So there's a cyclicalness to the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, sure, I agree with you. Wouldn't it be great if we could consecrate this country? And I think other bishops have done that. I don't know if the bishops as a whole have done that. I'd have to do a little bit of research. But I would welcome that. I would welcome a wholesale consecration of the United States of America to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, for example, to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. So if that were to happen, I would be a big cheerleader for it. I don't think that the two are mutually exclusive, though. So I don't think it's either let's consecrate this country or let's consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. You'll notice that in the Fatima apparitions, she didn't say anything about the United States of America, but she talked a lot about Russia. And I personally believe that we're living in the prophetic fulfillment. We're living in times of the prophetic fulfillment of things that were said in Fatima over 100 years ago. And so I would say let's have both and as opposed to either or. I've got to take a break, though. Thanks for the call. I'll be right back. Chris, I'm sorry we couldn't. Something happened with your phone and we lost you for a bit, but thank you for raising that issue. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app, and you can call me at 888-914-9149. Stay right there. I'm coming right back.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
There was apparently an unusual earthquake in the UK today. It measured 5.3 on the Richter scale from what I'm seeing. 5.1, excuse me, on the Richter scale, and it lasted, for what people are saying, it lasted for like a couple of minutes. And it happened at 5:23 a.m. And it's, you know, in the far north, so they felt it in the far north of England and parts of Scotland. But I don't know, just it's a little blip on the screen. You don't typically hear about earthquakes in the UK, and they had one. So make of it what you will. I don't know if it means anything. 888-914-9149. We'll go now to David in Lancaster, Ohio. Good morning, David.
Hi, Patrick. My question is, in a Bible study where they were discussing that Jesus died on the cross as a ransom for all, and our question came up is, who was the ransom paid to?
Well, it was paid to God, paid to the Father.
Okay.
We don't owe the devil anything. It's not as though he has to collect on a debt that he, in justice, has a right to. The simple way to put it would be this, that in the fall of Adam and Eve, they lost for themselves their right relationship with God because of their sin. And as a result of that, they lost for all the rest of us those good gifts that God had given them, that not only did they lose, but they no longer had it to pass on to their offspring, to their heirs. That would include us. So the debt of sin is what Jesus paid for by his death on the cross. And it extends not just to Adam and Eve, but to all of the human race that fell as a result of Adam and Eve's fall. So that satisfaction, as it's sometimes called, or expiation is another term that's used. Ransom is more of a Protestant term, it seems, in this context than a Catholic term, but we can work with that. And ultimately, it is the propitiation to God himself for the sins of humanity. And only God could do this. So in the second person of the Blessed Trinity, God the Son, as Jesus in the Incarnation, he's the one who is able to pay this debt that no human person could pay. And that was not a debt paid to the devil. It was a debt that was paid to God, to use that terminology.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. And I appreciate the phone call. How about George now in Los Angeles? Good morning, George. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Patrick. Yeah, I have a question. So okay. I will admit I'm reading the book, The Dogma of Hell, and a section, you know, where there's a human skull involved, you know, got me thinking. Assuming you can get one legally, right, which you can in somewhere in the country, is it morally okay to own a human skull or a human skeleton?
I think the answer to that question is yes, with an asterisk next to it. Let me tell you why I would say out of the gate yes, for the reason that some great saints were known to have a human skull on the desk in their cell, in the case of a religious, a monk or a sister. And they were known to have a skull for the purpose of remembering their own mortality. There's an ancient Latin phrase, memento mori, and it means remember death. And so it's not uncommon to see artistic depictions of saints. So like Saint Jerome, for example, or some of the other early saints, and you'll see a skull sitting on the desk. And they didn't have it because it was Halloween or anything like that. They had it so that they could contemplate by seeing this skull from somebody who died, that their own death was approaching eventually, and that they too, like that person who had died, whose skull was sitting on the desk, they too would have to give an account of their lives to Almighty God. So in a strict sense, it's not immoral to have a skull. Now, I could see where there were scenarios where it would be immoral to do that. Let's say a grave robber stole it. That would be immoral. Or if the family didn't realize that somebody had taken the skull of a family member whose bones had been dug up and they were going to reinter them, and somebody took the skull. I mean, there are ways in which having the skull could be immoral or illicit, but just as such, I don't think it is, for the reason of the great saints having it.
Thank you, Patrick.
What do you think, George?
Well, okay,
tell you what, as long as I've got you, when you're done asking your second question, I have a question I want to ask you, but you go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No. And here's the thing. I was considering this, you know, because I read, I listen to a lot, so I know a lot about memento moris, and for that reason, I thought maybe it's okay. But, you know, there was still a little bit of doubt, so I thought maybe, you know, calling would be the best thing to do. Because obviously, you know, you don't want to do anything immoral.
You don't want to do anything immoral. That's true. So this would be set within the context, let's say, of the church's requirement that at death, that the body of a baptized person should be preferably buried in a cemetery. But if that's impossible for whatever reason and cremation takes place, and you know that you're not allowed to have grandma's ashes on the mantelpiece in your living room, the church requires that those things be buried. This would have to be situated within that context. So if for some reason you came into possession of a human skull, that would then, if I were you, then I would be saying, well, first of all, whose is it? If there's any way to know whose it is, if it's somebody who was a baptized Catholic, I should try to find out where that person's body is buried and bring this back there if that's possible. If it's not possible, it may just be a generic human skull and there's no way to know whose it was at any given time. But it's not as though you couldn't have it for that reason. I think in this day and age, if you had a human skull in your home, that would be kind of weird. And to actually have human remains in your home could be problematic, let's just say, in this day and age, in a way that it would not have been problematic if in the 5th century or even the 4th century, say at the time of St. Jerome, if you were to walk into his cave where he was writing his works and things and you saw a human skull there, it wouldn't be weird in those days the way it would now. So that would, there's sort of a cultural consideration that I would think about as well. But anyway, so can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Okay, so you're reading, as you mentioned, The Dogma of Hell, that book that I talk about from time to time. Please tell me, and this is unrehearsed, I have no clue what you're going to say, but could you tell me what your reactions are to reading that book?
Well, I've only gotten past the second chapter, so I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I'm in the section where I won't give anything away. I'll just say the damned, give their testimony. And, yep. It's very moving. Honestly, the reason why I personally want to read it is just because, you know, for my own, struggles with sin, you know, and I want to, you know, remember, and I want to set myself straight to go to confession as often as possible, because I don't always go to confession as often as I should.
Uh-huh.
And it really does, you know, set you straight in that sense that, hey, it puts more pressure on you to not take confession so lightly and to not not to give a really good confession. Don't hold anything back, you know, because I know mm-hmm. that's one of the stories that are told about, you know, a person who held back at their confession. And so that's my impression. I plan to buy bulk copies of it to pass around, you know, because I think everyone should know about it.
I agree. In fact, I have seen miracles take place, quite frankly, and maybe George, you know, in your own life, you'll see something similar. I have seen miracles take place with people who have read that little book. It's not very long. What is it, 100 pages, maybe slightly over 100 pages?
I was surprised how short it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a long book. It's not an intimidating book. Anyone could pick it up and be done with it in a few hours, and I think their lives would change. But I've seen miracles of conversion take place when people have read this book, and it just grabs their attention. So believe me, I'm not at all surprised to hear you say that you're going to buy bulk quantities and pass it out, because it's the kind of thing that people, when they get a copy of it and they're willing to read it, it can be life-changing.
Yeah. Yeah,
all right.
Totally.
Well, hey, George. Anything else you want to add before we go?
You know, I'll think of 100 questions after I hang up, but I guess that'll be for another time.
All right. I'm the same way, George. I appreciate it. Yeah. Sometimes I think of, oh, all the things I wish I had said on the show before there was time. And then when we're out of time, there's no more time. You get the idea. Thank you. Let's go to Gwen. Actually, Gwen, do we have time? I think Gwen in Eagan, Minnesota. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. I just have a question about end-of-life issues for Catholics.
Okay.
Let's say someone has cancer and they're at the end stages and, you know, there's, you know, no coming back, no chemo is going to work, nothing's going to happen. What's the Catholic position on, you know, stopping liquids via IV or food or only giving them like morphine for pain? What's the Catholic position on that?
Okay, well, simply put, in the interest of the time we have, is that we are not morally able to withhold ordinary life-giving measures. So food, water, oxygen. Now, there are circumstances where a person, because of illness or injury, can no longer assimilate food, for example, even with a gastrointestinal tube. They're not able to assimilate the food. And a doctor would be in a position to be able to say, hey, if we put any more food in there, it could cause death or it could just create more problems. But that, generally speaking, is very rare. Ordinarily, the average person, even in a vegetative state, can still assimilate nutrition and can assimilate hydration. So what the church says is we can never directly withhold those things as a way to hasten death. You can give morphine for somebody who, you know, for whom the pain is terrible, of course. So that kind of palliative care is good and praiseworthy. But you are able to withhold or to discontinue, let's say, extraordinary means of keeping someone alive, like a ventilator, for example. And if the only thing that's keeping that person breathing and alive is a ventilator, the church says there comes a time when you can morally say, we've done everything we could, and we're going to turn that off. But in the ordinary course of events, you can't starve someone to death, and you can't withhold water. Sometimes, as I say, it gets down to the point where they can no longer receive it. That's different. But most often, it's somebody who can continue to receive it, and we have an obligation to provide it.
Yeah, it just seems so cruel for someone to be thirsting to death, and like yesterday's gospel was so perfect. So I was just wondering, because I want to do things the right way.
Yes, and God bless you for that. I'll recommend a book. It's called Life Issues, Medical Choices. And that book contains a chapter on this very issue. So I think you'll find that very interesting, not to mention the rest of it. Thank you, Gwen. Okay, we have one more hour to go, and it will go quickly. So if you've been thinking about calling, call now, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back right after this.